Welcome to Growing Up ATL, where we, the Mayor's ATL Year of the Youth Ambassadors, take the lead in producing and hosting content tailored specifically for the youth by the youth.
All right, guys, another day, another interview. Who do we have today?
Today we have Dr. Joycelyn Wilson.
Oh, yes, my girl. Yes, yes, yes.
I'm really excited to figure out kind of what inspired her to be kind of, a pioneer for culture in Atlanta.
I think she wrote T.I.'s first album review, and that may be wrong, but she's a writer. She's a professor at Georgia Tech. She's APS Mays High School graduate, and she writes about and teaches about all things culture. She's kind of like almost like a cultural historian. Mm. For the city, so this will be cool. Are y'all ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, good luck. I see you're coming in. Good luck, and I can't wait to hear what you learned from Dr. Joycelyn Wilson.
Thank you.
All right. Growing Up ATL.
This is Growing Up ATL. I'm Ayan.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Janine Lewis.
Yeah, today we are here with Dr. Joycelyn Wilson, an author, writer, and added this part in myself, a pioneer for culture in Atlanta, and professor at Georgia Tech.
Wow, thank you so much for coming and being here with us today. We really appreciate you taking the time out to speak with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
What would you like for us to call you today?
You can call me Joycelyn.
Okay. Ayan mentioned a lot within that introduction. One thing that stood out to me was that you're an author. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that you've written?
Sure. I have been writing for, probably a little over 2 decades. And I started off writing music reviews. And I wanted to see the South represented in hip-hop journalism in a more indigenous way, in a more authentic way. And so when I graduated from UGA, I started teaching high school mathematics. My undergrad is in math. And I was kind of a closet writer. Met one of my friends from high, thank you for taking me back to this, because I think it kind of connects with some of the stuff we're going to be talking about today. His name is Asbury Foster, rest in peace. He went to Douglas High School. And he was a photographer for a magazine called Rap Pages. Mm-hmm. Rap Pages was like the West Coast version of The Source. And The Source is considered the Bible of hip hop. It was the first newsletter, then magazine that was published that covered hip hop. Mm-hmm. And I told Asbury, I really want to write for magazines, and he introduced me to the music editor, Peter Cobb and Alan Gordon. They were the music editor and editor-in-chief at Rap Pages. And long story short, I was asked to write a 500-word review for a favorite artist. And I chose Outkast. Did I choose ATLians or did I choose Southern Playlistic? I think I may have chosen Southern Playlistic. I'm not sure. And I literally just studied the way in which reviews were written in magazines. And I submitted it. And he didn't even say yes or no, like, this is cool. He was just like, okay, well, when you get off work, one day come down to the magazine. And it was in the Larry Flint building down on, La Cienega, not too far from Beverly Hills. And if you know anything about Larry Flint, he published a lot of different magazines. And a lot of folks didn't know that he actually published Rap Pages. And so I would go down there after work and start opening up CDs. And I came across the So-So Def Bass All-Stars Volume 3. And I was like, I want to review this. And so he was like, cool. And I heard it, I reviewed it, and that was the first time I got some ink in a hip hop magazine. And so from there, I just kept writing music reviews turned into mini features and cultural stories covering, I covered The Last Freaknik in 1995 for them. That turned into writing a piece on Goody Mob that turned into a cover story. And then the last cover I wrote for them before I moved back to Atlanta was a conversation with my students. The good thing is that, you know, my students knew that I was writing for these magazines. So it kind of helped with classroom management and just student development. You know, they thought I was a cool teacher that was writing for the hip hop magazines. And we did like a round table of about 7 or 10 of them or whatever. And I was just kind of asking them, like, what did they like about hip hop? I think this was when DMX had DMX put out his first album, and then 6 months later he put out another album. Mm-hmm. That was pretty innovative at that time to drop 2 albums within 6 months, major albums, not mixtapes.
I think, is he the only one? So I he think had so. 2 albums in mm-hmm. the same year that both went platinum.
Yeah, he was the first to do that.
It's Dark and Hell is Hot.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
That was one of them. And then the second one. And so that was kind of like, and at the same time, Eminem was dropping his first album. So my editor was like, you know, if you sit with your students and do this, you know, ask them about DMX, ask them about Eminem's first album. And so that was really my first ethnographic interview with students about their love for hip hop and doing like this intergenerational conversation with them. And Jonathan Mannion shot the cover. And so that was my first cover. And from there, I was just like, you know, this is what I want to study. I want to teach classes that kind of bring all of these together, that brings that math side with my creative side and my writing side. And so I moved back to Atlanta and started teaching at the Lovett School. And while I was teaching there, I was still writing. I moved into writing for XXL. And started just giving artists that were in the city their first album. I wrote T.I.'s first story, wrote Scrappy's first story. It was a column that was in the magazine called Show Improve. And so I just kind of kept my ear to the streets, literally, of like who was coming up next, and made a lane for myself and pitched myself as someone that was from Atlanta, that knew the music, was from the South, and could write about it in a way that didn't sound stereotypical, you know, that could give some context, and just kind of went from there and just started publishing from there.
What's it like to have that impact on the culture? Because a lot of the times critics and writers can make or break an artist. So how did you handle that?
So I say sometimes, you know, like, these folks better be glad I'm not a gossip columnist, because I'm just not interested in that, right? I'm interested in the culture. I'm interested in making links between the culture and the community and the creativity and just the innovation amongst it all. I'm interested in the educational side of it, you know. So, that's just what I'm interested in. And I've never been interested in anything other than that. So I don't get involved, and I'm not trying to make or break anybody, you know. I'm not trying to get involved in whatever they got going on personally. So I just kind of stick to what I'm interested in, and that's the culture.
So you've been, and I didn't know that about you, that you were out in California and teaching in California and got your start with Rap Pages in California. I'm wondering, as it is the 50th anniversary year of hip hop, it is the year of the youth in Atlanta, as someone who's been writing about young artists, because I don't think we realize that when T.I. broke, when DMX broke, they were early 20s, if mm-hmm. not in their late teens. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing as someone who teaches still today at Georgia Tech? What parallels are you seeing between hip hop culture now and hip hop culture of the 90s and early 2000s?
Parallels. To your point, like, there are young artists. Like, I have 2 artists in my class right now. They're students who are, like, really on the scene and producing music and using that as a creative outlet, you know, for school or whatever they might be going through. So to be on the other side and kind of seeing that these college students are producing their music and producing, you know, their art and pushing it on social media, mm-hmm. and got good followings. I don't know if you all have heard of Zaire Rouge. Like, he's been pretty pretty popular. You know, he's getting a little following. And so to have him in my class was pretty cool. Other parallels that I'm seeing, well, I don't even know if it's a parallel, but the idea of just seeing folks come full circle has been pretty cool to watch, right? So when we talk about Hip Hop 50, like, we're talking about a middle-aged cultural phenomenon, and I think a lot of youth forget, you know, that this is a culture that's 50 years old. And so just that intergenerational piece, I think, is pretty cool. I didn't really see a lot of that before, but seeing it now is actually pretty fascinating. And then seeing that, you know, there are folks who still want to write about it. You know, I've had students say to me that they want to get into writing about it. And my thing is, you have so many different opportunities that I didn't have. There were no blogs. There was no internet. Or it was the internet was just beginning to start. So this idea of being a blogger and kind of creating your own platform is not something that I had the fortunate or had the fortune of having at my disposal. I had to submit to magazines. And then oftentimes you had, you know, the same stronghold that New York artists have on hip hop or want to have on hip hop or claim to hip hop, the writers have to deal with the same thing. So a lot of times you had writers from up top coming down to the South wanting to write about the music and wanting to write about the culture.
And not being of the culture.
And we were like, nah, like, we're here. We can write about this in a way that doesn't, that they don't have the fortune of being able to talk about. So I think that's something that's really unique, is being able to have your own platforms now. So if you wanted to write a music review, you can do it and you can publish it on your own blog and you can send it out into the world. So those are things that I think are quite fascinating and that I have to continue to remind my students that you really have a lot more at your disposal than you think you do to publish and put your work out there.
I think this podcast is a good example of that.
It is.
So growing up in the 90s and the early 2000s, if you weren't in a magazine, a newspaper, or a book, there was nowhere to get your writing, to get your art really out. So that's a really great point.
And if you wanted to do something like a podcast, you had to be on a radio show, right?
Right.
But now you can just produce it on your own and put it out into the world.
Yeah. Speaking of full circle moments, we ask, and we'll get to that after, towards the end of the interview, the conversation, but we've been asking everyone who their favorite Atlanta artist is, and without even taking a tally, T.I. is first on everyone's lips, and just last week, he cut the ribbon on an affordable housing complex. With the mayor. So interesting. You talk about full circle moments. You writing about him when he was in his early 20s, coming out.
I don't even think he was 20 yet.
Was he even in?
I don't even think he had. Let me see. So if I do the math, that piece came out in 2001, I want to say. How old is that? Was 22 years ago. And T.I.'s just turning 40.
He was
18.
So starting as 18, 19-year-old, first album out, you growing up in Atlanta, writing about artists who are coming out of Atlanta, and here we fast forward 20 years, and he's standing with the mayor, cutting a ribbon on an entire building of affordable housing. You started as a math teacher, writer. Now we're celebrating 50 years of hip-hop, and you have tons of clips and are a treasure trove of knowledge of how the city has developed over the years. This really is a full circle moment.
Yeah, I remember riding down Bankhead with Tip. He was a little guy. Like he's kind of little now, but he was like really little.
He's petite.
He was little, right? Mm-hmm. And he had this huge maroonish, purplish type Chevy Suburban, and we were flying down. I mean, we was just moving.
Down,
I had my little recorder. I still have that mini cassette of that conversation. And you know, I was like, you call yourself the King of the South. Like, what is that? And he really stood on that. Mm-hmm. And so even through his ups and downs, I'm really happy and proud to see him push through and continuing to push through, you know, his own challenges. You know, he is a unique artist. You know, he's not perfect. None of us are. But he really loves this city. And he's been able to rise to all of those affirmations that he put on himself. He's manifested it. And to be there when to have that interview when he was couldn't really see what was going to happen on the other side. He just had affirmed it. And that was pretty dynamic.
You seem to have a lot of knowledge, and you are a professor at Georgia Tech for what I would call a more unconventional course that a lot of people might not know about. So can you tell us about what you teach?
Yeah, sure. I came to Georgia Tech in 2016, 2017 as a visiting professor. At the time, I was a full-time professor, faculty member at Virginia Tech, and was ready to come home. And I was hired to start a Black Media Studies minor, myself and my colleague, Susanna Morris. And we came as fellows, and we really were beginning to just carve out a space in academia that was starting around Black media arts and cultural studies. There's one at Yale, and there's one, I think, at Indiana, and now Stanford has one. And so part of those courses were on communication and culture, hip-hop studies, social media, Afrofuturism, social media, just really looking at the ways in which media making and Blackness intersect. And in a city like Atlanta, you know, where we have a music and film industry, there's a technology industry here, you know, even the Institute felt like there needed to be a structured, centered set of courses that students can take that could supplement and augment whatever their major is. And that became the Black Media Studies minor. So students can, if you're a business major, if you are an industrial design major, if you are a media and communications major, then you can pair this minor with your major depending on what your aspirations are. So say you want to come into the podcasting space, you know, you want to executive produce them, you want to not only create them but also executive produce them, then your business background paired with this minor can give you a program of study that can help you hone that. So when we created the Black Media Studies minor, which is now developing into a program, there are now four of us. There is Andre Brock, Susanna Morris, myself, and John Thornton, who is over the film studies department. And so you have this opportunity to really focus on key areas in media and media making that can support and complement your major. And it is new.
Ion, don't you go to Georgia Tech?
Yes, business major.
Yeah, you should be a Black Media Studies minor.
I'm definitely interested.
And I'm not just saying that just because, but I really believe that what you're sitting here doing right now, paired with your business major, mm-hmm. it'll give you some insight into the history of Black media making. It can give you history into filmmaking. It can give you history into social media and just technological innovation and the role that culture, Black and brown culture, plays in just kind of honing that enterprise. I mean, and we know that it informs popular culture mm-hmm, and just definitely. American mainstream culture. So you'll have a focused, centered opportunity to learn about that and figure out how to marry it to your business administration major.
Yeah, you mentioned Blackness earlier, and I feel like we don't really get enough credit for our influences in culture. Like, just for example, even slang or even slang that we use today or clothing, like baggy clothes is a thing that was started by Black people, the word swag. I asked one of my friends who lives in England if they knew where it came from. They didn't know the background of it. They didn't know it was a Black term. So to be able to learn about the culture and history behind everything is something I plan to take interest in.
What year are
you? Action in second. Yes.
Yeah. You still have time. You should. And it's 12 to 15 credit hours. I mean, so you'll get it and you'll be in and out. And you'll have that to support your major. Women in Atlanta have, like, we're the foundation and the springboard and the mm-hmm. support, you know, and provide a lot of the infrastructure for many of the folks to be able to capitalize and actualize their own dreams. As it relates to hip hop, I think that Atlanta shows us that women in hip hop are not just rappers. I think as the culture begins to become even more dynamic, what we're seeing is the way in which we're talking about and expanding the way in which we define women in hip hop. There are women who are stylists. There are women who create content. There are women who are at the city. There are former mayors who are women. There are, you know, music executives. If we're talking about Outkast, then we know Shanti Das is, you know, someone who was at the forefront of helping the world know about who they were and who they are. So I think that we're going to continue to see women in these roles, you know, especially around education and culture and policy and media making. You know, we have women who are, you know, just really behind the scenes, but on the scenes. You know, I'm beginning to not like the word behind the scenes because it renders someone invisible. And I think that with women, we're on the scene and not invisible at all, just because you don't necessarily see women on as much as you see men on television or whatever, doesn't mean that there isn't some woman with her hand in what's happening. I mean, you're here, right? And so I think that it's important for us to just kind of celebrate that and think about women of the culture beyond those who are making the culture, but also creating opportunities for others to make the culture, whether that's as an executive producer or whether that is as a director. You know, there are women who are coders, right, and creating scripts. So I think all of that is really important. And when we talk about Atlanta's history, women are right there at the forefront of that. I mean, if we talk about, there's a woman by the name of, you know, Bunny Jackson Ransom, you know, who mm-hmm. was married to Maynard Jackson. A lot of people think about her as the former mayor's wife or former mayor's ex-wife, but she's not. She's so much more. Folks forget that she managed the SOS band, that she managed Cameo, that she managed Brick, that she managed a lot of these artists. She was huge in public relations and music management. And I believe folks like Ethiopia Haptamariam and Shanti Das, they stand on her shoulder, right? Her shoulders. And so I think it's important that we elevate those folks as we talk about the history, not just of Atlanta culture, but also the women who are here.
Definitely. And I would say I'm very thankful for all of my role models. And, you know, speaking to you, I feel like you've given so much already. But do you have any advice for other young ladies like myself?
Mm-hmm. Listen to your gut. A lot of these decisions are made from the gut. You know, no one could have told me that I would have a math degree and end up pivoting to educational anthropology and teaching about culture and Black media and hip hop and doing some of the things that I've been doing. So just because you've never seen it done before doesn't mean that it can't be. And if I had listened to folks saying, you know, what is it that you really do? There was a period in my life, like, I was like, what is it that you do?
What is that?
What you do? You know, like, you going where? Even like my mom and my sister, we laugh about this now. Like, early on, they would be like, I don't really know what it is she's doing, but I know she's about to quit her job and go back to school, right? And so, and she's publishing. I mean, I see her byline, you know. So I would say listen to your gut. A lot of those decisions that I made were made from the gut. Yeah.
Why do you think hip hop and Black culture in general, I would say, has gone from being very marginalized to now a huge impact in today's culture?
So I can give you like this. Do I give you the academic response?
Whatever you want to say.
Do I give you, so in my research, what I have found is that hip hop comes on the scene with a few things already there, right? And its ability to remix pretty much anything it touches. Like, it takes the idea of sampling and remixing and kind of turns it on its head and makes it one of its most applied design thinking properties. You know, it remixes everything. If you just kind of sit for a minute and think about everything that it touches, it changes. I mean, rap music existed before hip hop, but hip hop touches it and it becomes rap music. It becomes this huge genre. Dancing and windmills and ciphers, that wasn't introduced with hip hop. That there's footage of Nigerian tribes yeeking, you know, we call it yeek dancing, but if you just kind of trace it back, it existed long before it became something that was embraced by Black and brown communities in New York, or yeek dancing embraced by Black communities in Atlanta. But hip hop touches it and it becomes something else.
Wait, so yeek is in ours?
It is ours.
Okay.
It's ancestral. It's part of that cultural DNA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you even go back to graffiti, right? This idea of using a canvas to express yourself visually, that doesn't start with hip hop. That starts with hieroglyphics. So hip hop comes on the scene being what I like to define as a design remix. Anything it touches, whether it's education, fashion, you know, music, hair, you know, clothes, anything that it touches, it changes. And I think that it's not so much about what it is, it's about what's in it. Right. And so it comes on the scene as, you know, it's obsessed with schooling. You know, it's obsessed with teaching you something. It's obsessed with knowledge acquisition and knowledge construction and reconstruction. It's obsessed with justice and equity. You know, it's obsessed with technological innovation, you know, and all of those things, I think, create this stew, right, that we ultimately called hip hop. And that's why I think it's been able to have so much global reach. And the last thing, it comes on the scene cool. You know, whatever it touches, it kind of makes it cooler. And if it's not cool and corny, then it's considered inauthentic. And if you're not being authentic, you get kicked out, right? So, I mean, I'm just speaking kind of in general. Mm-hmm. And so those are the four things that I think that are in hip hop that kind of creates this, like I say, this cultural stew that is applied across different modes, right? And it changes it. So just sit for a minute and watch TV and count how many commercials are using hip hop in some shape, form, or fashion, you might miss it. If you're not looking very closely, you know, they might use a song. But the Arby's commercial, for example, you know, we have the Meats, that song, like that's from Pusha T. You know, that's a remix of Pusha T's song. I can't remember the name that he was on, but, you know, he gets a check every time that commercial airs. But a lot of folks don't know that commercial has been infused with hip hop. You know, if you look at these progressive insurance commercials, if you look at these car commercials, somehow, some way they are being infused, even down to these pharmaceutical drug commercials. you know, one of them, they're dancing and they're using, I like the way you move, you know. So I think that, and the idea is to get people to pay more attention to it because they want to kind of exploit those properties. So that's why I think it's global. I think that's why it's had so much mainstream appeal. Also think that's why it's kind of under attack.
I think making an executive production decision, we probably need to have you come back.
Yes. And definitely.
Whole, because we could do a whole segment on Atlanta, hip hop, but we also probably could do a whole segment on the history of women in Atlanta and the culture and how women have impacted the culture. So
yeah, that would be great.
We'll reach out to your people again and see if we can get on
whatever
on your calendar.
And I kind of want to know a little bit more about you. Mm-hmm. So who is your favorite Atlanta artist?
Oh, that depends on the day.
No pressure, Dr. Joycelyn.
I mean, today I'm liking Andre 3000 because I just like how he continues to take these creative risks. You know, like, no one started singing until The Love Below. Think about it. I mean, a whole album. I mean, we would have Ja Rule. He would sing a here and there, but a whole album of singing and rapping.
But we got Speaker Box with it.
We have Speaker Box with it, of course. But what I'm saying is, like, the risk that he took in The Love Below to not only talk about love, but then to sing about it. We don't get 808s and Heartbreaks until after that. We don't get Drake until after that. So he gives this space. He's like the first one out the window.
So are you thinking we're going to have more woodwind-inspired albums?
I think that we're going to have more artists taking risks around learning instruments and putting out albums that might show what they've learned. Or we're going to see Andre as a featured artist or a producer maybe on music. I don't think this is arbitrary. You know, and it's not separated from Hip Hop 50. I think that it elevates it. And today he's my favorite. But, you know, I am a huge Outkast, Big Boy fan. I'm a T.I. fan, you know. I like Rasheeda. You know, I like what she's been able to do and how she's been able to finesse her brand, you know.
Businesswoman.
Yeah. And so those are some of my favorite Atlanta, we're talking specifically.
Now, you named
about
a lot of the more old school artists. Do you have a favorite new school artist?
Any new school artist from Atlanta? Is it wrong that I don't have too many of them?
No, it's fine.
I think, you know what? I
like Earth Gang.
Earth Gang, okay.
You know, but I don't think they're considered new, right?
Yeah, what is considered new?
I
think it says a lot about the artists who have come out of Atlanta that we could put all of their music from the early 2000s to the new artists who are out now, your Hunchos, your Lottos, and all of those folks.
I like Lotto. I saw
and
her.
Have a whole Atlanta playlist.
Mm-hmm. She's going to be on the Grammy tribute for Hip Hop 50.
Really?
I attended it last week or week before last, and she's there. Mm-hmm. She was there. Tell me the young lady that I'm blanking on her name right now that did That's Not Atlanta.
Amaretta,
like, where is she? Like, why are we not seeing more of her?
I think, you know what? She has been, she's done some features.
I want to see
but
more
I would
of her.
Like to see more of her. I love her.
I want to see more of
even
her.
Even though she made it clear that I'm not from Atlanta. shout out to Marietta High. My feelings are, she hurt a lot of people's feelings with that. But that's okay. When you love people, you're honest with them.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And we knew, I knew I wasn't from Atlanta, but.
You are from Atlanta Metro.
I'm from Atlanta Metro, right. That'll be on the remix.
Yeah.
That'll be on the remix.
So I want to see more of her. I would like to see more of her. I have my suspicions around why we're not seeing more of her, but I would like to hear more of her.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're going to wrap it up with one final question.
Okay.
One meal one Atlanta-based
place, restaurant.
Place. Mm-hmm. Where are you eating and what are you ordering?
Go. Oh.
You got one shot. And then you're going on a liquid diet after that.
Okay.
So what's the one
thing?
Where
am I going?
Where are you going and what are you ordering?
Okay. Man.
And are there wings involved? Because everyone has brought up wings or crab legs. Yep.
Or chicken.
Or chicken.
No, not really.
We love our wings, our crab legs. So where are you going? One meal.
Here come my maize high bougie that's about to come out.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to Houston's.
Okay. Okay.
I'm going to Houston's. I'm sitting at the bar. And I get their red snapper, their Cajun red snapper.
Ooh, okay. I love red snapper.
And that side of that kale salad on the side. And I am getting a spinach dip. You know, I've been going to Houston since 11th grade prom. So I don't know why. Like, I just, it's consistent, mm-hmm. you know. But, you know, I'm going to Pascal's too, but I can't have both. So y'all asked me to choose one, and I'm just trying to think about where I've been ending up here lately.
For the sake of the theme, we'll go with Pascal.
Okay.
But we all know.
Houston I'm has going some, to the Houston's
Houston's
on
some
Peachtree,
problems
though.
Over the, yeah.
I'm but, going to the Black Houston's.
You know what? I think it's time. This is an all-inclusive growing up ATL. We're going to the Black Houston's. On Peachtree.
Across from Benihana.
Our previous guest, you know.
During lunchtime.
I work, and we are going to wrap this up because our engineer is giving us the signal. Our producers are giving us the signals. It's time to wrap it up, but I will say, I worked at the TGI Fridays that used to be on Peachtree near Benihana
mm-hmm.
when I was interning at LaFace Records. And
I remember that TGI Friday.
That was the, everybody came
now. It's a Fresh Market, I think.
It's a Fresh Market now. But it used to be a TGI Fridays. That Benihana has been there
forever.
If only the hibachi grills could talk.
Been there forever.
A lot of volcano, little onion volcanoes.
Well, thank you, Dr. Joycelyn Wilson, for joining us today. I feel like you definitely need to come back. You have so much knowledge to spread.
Oh, thank
and
you.
I hope to get into your course so I can learn a
hey,
bit
I'll
more.
Hey, I'll get you in there. Just you know, the thing that I would say also is following up, you know, yeah. Like you got to follow up. You know, I think a lot of times young folks, like you think that people don't want to hear back from you. But, yeah, when somebody gives you their number or says, holler at me, follow up, and make sure you do so. So I'll be looking for to hear from you, and I'll be looking to hear from you, too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We appreciate having you, and we hope to see you back soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. This is
Growing Up ATL.
Now, Miss Lewis usually starts these, but I'm going to take over for a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Ms. Joycelyn Wilson, first off, just wow. That was an incredible conversation.
Dr. Joycelyn Wilson. How was that? I stepped out for a minute. Once I came back in, you guys were talking about updating your majors and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So tell me about that. How was that interview with Dr. Joycelyn Wilson?
Oh, my God. Her knowledge really speaks volumes just for herself. Everything. I feel like there's so much to learn from her. And mm-hmm. I don't even feel like we started, to be honest with you. I want to continue, which is why I'm interested in taking her course.
So I've known Dr. Joycelyn for a really long time, since I interned at a music label here in Atlanta. And I had the pleasure of speaking to her classroom several years ago, probably about 5 years ago, honestly, and to see the makeup of her classroom mm-hmm. and to understand exactly how much teaching and forming for some of the students that are in her class. They are not familiar with hip hop at all. They're not. This is the first city that they've come that, you know, even has a makeup as you know, to be candid, Black as this Atlanta is. So I realized how enthralled those students were in that conversation. What she's doing is really important work. And you guys only reach the surface of what she does and the extent of her knowledge and just her understanding of a cultural figure here in Atlanta. So I wasn't in the conversation, but it was really cool to listen back and hear exactly what she touched on and how you guys were able to blend the conversations together.
Right. I felt like I learned a lot from her, and I would really love for her to come back and hear a part two of it. She was very insightful, I feel like, especially when she started talking about women in Atlanta and her experience here.
She is a wealth of knowledge.
Yes.
I actually met her before the pandemic. She was speaking at the TEDx Call Your Heights, and she is just, I agree, we've got to bring her back.
Definitely.
She probably could do an entire series on different topics. When she started speaking about Mrs. Jackson and in her career, we know her as Maynard Jackson's spouse at one time, but had no idea that she was in communications and working in entertainment and broadcasting and things like that. So, or public relations, I think she said. So, yeah, Dr. Joycelyn is a wealth of knowledge. So I thought it was interesting that her favorite restaurant was Houston's.
Yeah.
We expect people to say those Atlanta staples, but what stood out for me was her first time going to Houston's. I think she said it was for prom or something like that.
For her prom.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Hopefully we'll be able to, through this ambassador program, introduce you guys to other cultural staples. And 20 years from now, you'll be telling kids how you met Dr. Joycelyn Wilson and she hipped you to her favorite restaurants. And you're right, Kayla, we've got to bring her back because I want to know more about that ride down Bankhead with T.I. as a 19-year-old and the fact that she started writing before hip-hop journalism was a thing. In Atlanta, at least. So. Kirsten, you've been a huge support with identifying the right people for the podcast as the creative director for Year of the Youth. I have to say, I'm excited about the interviews that we have coming up, and I can't wait for people to hear what we've captured.
Yeah, they've all been so good. And for the guests that I've known to come, I feel like the perspective is a little bit different. And to just see you all spark a twinkle in their eye and for you all to be hosting such great conversations and, you know, bringing some questions out that they typically don't get asked. I think that's been a beautiful part of this project, this podcasting project. So we thought it was going to be one small thing. And now, you know, we're competing with NPR. So I love that for us.
We are. And they say we influence everything, and the mayor wants to ensure that Atlanta is the best place to raise a child. So growing up ATL is at that crossroads for young people who are trying to figure out what their next step is. And I don't know, but I think Ion, Kayla, I'm hoping broadcast journalism is in your future.
Definitely thinking about it.
Well, this was a great episode of Growing Up ATL. We'll see you guys soon.
This has been another episode of Growing Up ATL, a podcast created by your mayor's ATL Year of the Youth ambassadors. Visit us at atlyearoftheyouth.com or follow us on Instagram at ATL Year of the Youth for more information.